the McLaughlin case, and are parties ready to proceed?
Yes, ma'am.
And would you like to reserve rebuttal time?
I would, Your Honor, approximately 5 minutes.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
May it please the Court, my name is Elisa Leonard. I'm with the Virginia Beach Public Defender's Office. I'm here on behalf of Robert McLaughlin, the appellant in this matter. And the facts were fairly simple in this case. Mr. McLaughlin was a probationer, and he was seeking to have his probation transferred to the City of Virginia Beach. Probation Officer Franklin was required to do a site visit to confirm that the address was in fact a real address and that he had a real residence in which to reside. She goes to the home, and she knocks on the door. A young lady answers the door, lets her in. She goes in. She asks if Mr. McLaughlin is there. Apparently, the lady responded that she did not believe he was there. She then asked if she could see his bedroom. Once the young lady opened up the bedroom door, testimony at the suppression hearing was that Probation Officer Franklin stepped just into the threshold of the door and saw a gun there on the nightstand. He eventually was charged with possession of a firearm by a felon. He did file a motion to suppress, arguing that absent a valid consent, probation officer had the right to enter his bedroom. So the real issue, I guess the simplest issue before the court, is was it reasonable for Probation Officer Franklin, under the totality of the circumstances at the time, was it reasonable for her to assume that the young lady that answered the door had any actual or apparent authority to grant her entry into the home or entry into the bedroom? Now, obviously, Mr. McLaughlin was on probation, and as a probationer, he had given up a certain degree of his rights, but he didn't give up all of his rights. He certainly had submitted himself to probation and the expectation that they would perform random visits.
He signed the agreement saying that they could visit his home.
Correct, that they could visit, and visit being something quite different than an actual out-and-out search. And Probation Officer Franklin was very candid in that she wasn't going there to search. She was literally going there to make a site visit. She didn't have...
So does that give actual authority to at least go in the front door?
I think realistically, when you knock on a door and someone lets you in, that could be construed as a visit. I think more specifically, her then asking, "Can you show me his room?" might elevate that visit to a little more akin to a search than just a simple visit, especially when you consider that the bedroom door was closed and it was indicated that this is Robert's room, Robert's not here, and can you let me into Robert's room? So our position would be that certainly the bedroom door and asking to go into the bedroom door elevates it into something a little less innocent than a plain visit there at the home.
Well, Ms. Leonard, can I follow up on that? Because the court said that in weighing the evidence that was presented, that one, Ms. Sanchez, he found that Ms. Sanchez Young lived in the trailer, that she could enter and leave as she pleased, she could have guests over, and apparently she did at the time of the visit. They had the woman and the little girl there chatting with her and having a drink together, and that she had the authority to enter the defendant's room. From the evidence, it appears, and the court finds that it was reasonable for Ms. Franklin to believe that she had authority to consent to the search. Of course, then you're getting to the ultimate question. But if he's made factual findings of that nature that I just read, why wouldn't it be pretty clear that Ms. Alicia Sanchez Young, to Ms. Franklin, had apparent authority to not only let her in, but when she said, "Can I see, you know, where is his bedroom, make sure he's actually living here," and she says something like, "Sure," and then takes her back and opens the door, why isn't that apparent authority?
Your Honor, our position would be as to the factual findings that the judge was clearly wrong in coming to that determination. Ms. Franklin testified that she knocks on the door, Ms. Young Sanchez comes to the door, allows her in. She obviously at some point gets her name. She sees the other young lady and a small child there in the living room, but there's very little conversation that happens in regards to, is this your home? It doesn't appear that Probation Officer Franklin even asked her, "Do you live here?" She did ask, "Is Mr. McLaughlin here?" to which the answer was no, but she didn't ask her, "Do you live here?" or "How long are you visiting?" or anything that one would seem to find the normal course of trying to establish that this person has some authority here in the home.
Is it of any significance that she introduced or alluded to her friend and her friend's daughter as people who had come over to visit?
That would kind of suggest that I'm here more than just this very moment, but probation officer Franklin's testimony, she really didn't have a recollection of how she came to have that information. It seemed almost that she saw them there, she assumed they were visiting. She said they were chatting and having some drinks at that point. I don't recall specifically that she asked them, are they just visiting, but clearly she felt that the other lady didn't live there and was there only temporarily. Our position, obviously, during the suppression hearing, during trial, more information came out that Mr. McLaughlin was the only person on the lease, he's the only person paying rent, he's the only person that had a relationship with the landlord such that he had a key. So obviously, at the time of the search, Ms. Franklin does not know this information, but Ms. Franklin took no efforts to learn any information beyond which, does Mr. McLaughlin live here, and can you let me see
the bedroom? Was it really incumbent, if they're just doing a transfer investigation, because apparently, you know, people move around a lot, and this, mm-hmm. that happened in this case, where she'd had to apparently go out, check in Norfolk, check in Virginia Beach a couple times. Is it really incumbent on the probation officer to, in doing that, to actually see who's on the lease? That would take a lot of effort.
I won't say that it was incumbent upon her to see who was on the lease. That would be a good answer to the question. But I think she at least should have asked, do you live here? You know, do you live here? Perhaps segued into, well, do you pay rent? You just rent a room? But she didn't even ask her if she lived there. So that was really based on assumption that she lived there. She's obviously there and she's answered the door, but anything beyond that is never made clear. And as Probation Officer Franklin said, well, I wasn't there for that. I wasn't there to investigate her. I was simply there to confirm the residence. So it may have been on the probation officer's part a little innocent that I don't really care who's here. I just want to see the house.
I just want to make sure he's sleeping here, basically.
Precisely. But again, I think once it gets to you've got a closed bedroom door, a room identified as this is Robert's room, and she says, well, can I see the room? I think she owes it to the appellant to ask more questions as to does this person have the authority to open this door for me and let me in this room? Now, obviously, when the door is open, Ms. Young Sanchez apparently makes some gesture of, oh, I didn't realize he's in there, to which the probation officer in the suppression hearing transcript says, I stepped to the side and kind of got a better look and stepped a little just in, and that's when she sees the gun. So his being there, the fact that it was, oh, whoa, I didn't know you were here, kind of suggests that Ms. Young Sanchez didn't have absolute authority over every room in that house. She may arguably could let you into the living room if we believe she lives there, but the door creates a barrier and creates some message of privacy that this is Mr. McLaughlin's room.
McLaughlin, appellant, ever really argue, though, that Ms. Sanchez Young, or for that matter, appellant himself, when he woke up, sort of immediately revoked consent?
No, and that would kind of distinguish it from certain other cases that are cited within the petition. He had to be woken up. Apparently it took Ms. Young Sanchez going into the room and kind of bringing him into awakeness to get him to recognize what was going on. By that time, Ms. Franklin had already, her suppression hearing testimony, stepped slightly in and seen the firearm. So he really didn't have an opportunity to wake up and say, can you get the door? I'll be right out. You know, he didn't have a chance to object.
Sanchez Young didn't really say, oh, by the woe, it meant I didn't want you to come in at that point.
No. The woe seemed to mean I didn't know he was in there.
Right.
So, which in my mind, in our argument, implies that she didn't just have carte blanche to go in and out of the rooms. She's halted herself once she saw that he was in fact in the room. Presumptively, I guess she thought he would wake up and deal with it, but he had to be woken up. Again, I think the entry into the room kind of elevates it to a little more than just a visit. When you look at the cases cited within the petition, there's a little distinguishing that I can make here in regards to, for instance, Glenn and Block. Those people were asked questions that kind of established that they had more authority than just mere visitors or what have you in the house. The grandfather in Glenn, it was made clear this is his house. I allow my grandfather to live here. In Block, it's made clear this is Mom's house. She allows her son to live here, but as to the footlocker in the bedroom, that's his. We didn't have that here, so it doesn't seem that the probation officer even took minimal steps to try and confirm something so simple. So that being the case, we don't believe it was reasonable for the probation officer to then assume that this person had apparent authority. She did not even take minimal effort to confirm that. I don't expect her to go to the leasing office and have the lease in hand, but she didn't even ask the simplest of questions. It all seemed to have been about assumption. And I think when you consider we're talking about someone's Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable search and seizure, it's not an undue burden on the probation office to ask that question, is this your home? Even in Illinois versus Rodriguez, even though the assumption turned out to be wrong, the person who answered, the female who allowed them into the residence, spoke in terms of our house, you know, used her own key. There were indicia of some level of authority. We don't even have that here other than the fact that she opened the front door and that her child, presumptively her child and another person, were in the living room. There's no any indication that there were items strewn about the home that one would believe belonged to her, or that, you know, she said, well, that's his bedroom and mine is down the hall. There wasn't any conversation of that sort. So that being the case, we maintain that it was not reasonable for the probation officer to assume apparent authority on the behalf of Ms. Young Sanchez.
If we were to agree with you on that, given what the U.S. Supreme Court said in Herring and then again in Davis in 2011 about you only suppress as a last resort when you can use it to deter essentially bad police conduct in the future. As you say here, with the probation officer, she's just trying to see if he's actually living there. And the events unfold, as you said, sort of in an innocent way on her part. What would be the bad police conduct that would require not suppression and use of the exclusionary rule?
I would not term her conduct as bad conduct or the conduct as bad conduct that one needs to deter, but I think it would send a message that you need to be more careful. Even though she may not have gone there with an ill intent, as an agent of the state, you got to be more careful when you're going into someone's home and you're potentially abridging a constitutional right. So not so much to smack you on the hand, don't ever do this again, but be more careful when you do. So that would be my response, and I'll yield the remainder of my time until my rebuttal.
Good afternoon, Judge Chafin, and may it please the Court. Stephen Whitmer on behalf of the Commonwealth today. The area of probationer searches is one that is evolving. For that reason, the Commonwealth suggests and agrees with the appellant that the simplest way upon which to decide this case is by applying the apparent authority doctrine, which would require this Court to make no new law in the area of probationer searches. This court has before it a factual finding that Alicia Young Sanchez lived in the trailer, and a factual finding that she had authority to enter the defendant's room. And that finding is uncontradicted by any evidence in the record. Neither the defendant nor any other witness testified and said that Ms. Young Sanchez did not have authority to open that door at any time. These findings are supported by the record. They are not plainly wrong, and that should be the end of this court's legal inquiry in this case. Judge Beals, you asked whether the probation officer was obliged to conduct an investigation, and she was not. Georgia v. Randolph makes it very clear that this is not about the legal relationship between the parties. It's not about whether she's a leaseholder. It's not about whether they're roommates. It's not about whether she's an overnight guest. If I have my parents over to my house for a week and they're watching my daughters and I go away to work and a policeman knocks on the door and says, "May I come in?" they can admit the police officer. They're a person of suitable age and discretion who answered the door. I've left them in charge of the property. This is a matter of common sense. This is not assumptions. These are inferences that reasonable police officers or probation officers may draw from the facts before them. And in fact, the trial court determined that the inferences drawn by the probation officer in this case were reasonable. For these reasons, the court should affirm the conviction. I'd be happy to answer any questions the court has.
Any questions from the panel?
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Again, Your Honor, just very briefly, again, we've just stressed that our position is that it was not reasonable, based on the information known to Probation Officer Franklin, to assume apparent authority by Ms. Young Sanchez. The other cases that are referenced, again, they ask more questions. She didn't ask any questions here. She assumed merely because the person answered the door. I can think of numerous instances where someone may be in your house, but they have no real authority. You could be the cable guy working on the cable. You could be the person working on the air conditioner. You're there for a limited reason, not to grant access into and around my home. So I'd ask the court, looking at the totality of the circumstances, and I realize that there's been a factual finding by the trial court, but our position has been that the trial court was clearly wrong in that factual finding. But I would ask that when you look at the totality of the circumstances, there are very few factors that the probation officer relied on in her assessment that this person had authority. And our position is that had she asked the questions, then perhaps she could have established. We know that Ms. Sanchez wasn't on the lease. As to whether she was living there, that was neither confirmed or denied by the probation officer, who had the perfect opportunity to ask that question, and whether she had authority beyond the common area, and certainly whether that authority extended into a bedroom that was, the door was closed and access was not granted to the common public.
She had it in her notes that this was appellant's sister, but she said, I don't remember her telling me that, but she said, I don't know why I'd have it there if she didn't tell me.
If she didn't tell me.
What do you make of that?
Again, I think she was going on assumptions. She was not clear what the conversation may have been as to how she arrived at this sister. But beyond that, she did not ask many more questions. I guess it would be reasonable if she's going there for a site check to ask who lives there, but she didn't bother to ask that question, and that's why we're here. That's all the questions. Thank you.
Thank you.